Ficatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ficatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're embarking on, well, quite an adventure, actually.
A journey, you could say.
Yeah, one that spans continents, philosophy, and, you know, that really fundamental question we humans tend to ask ourselves.
What am I actually here for? What's my purpose?
Exactly that. Today, we are diving deep into Paulo Coelho's massive worldwide phenomenon, The Alchemist.
Yeah, and it's such a unique book because it really goes beyond just being a story, doesn't it?
It does.
It's something millions of people have picked up, looking not just for entertainment, but almost for a blueprint.
A roadmap.
A roadmap, exactly. Yeah. It speaks directly to that feeling of being at a crossroads, maybe wondering if the safe path, the one you're on, is actually holding you back from a life that's, well, truly fulfilling.
And our sources really emphasize that point. It's structured less like a novel and more like a kind of spiritual guide. It's meant to shift your perspective.
Mm.
So if you listening maybe feel a bit overwhelmed by choices or maybe stuck, paralyzed by the thought of changing direction, this deep dive should help unpack why this seemingly simple story resonates so deeply as a guide for transformation.
It really zeroes in on that core tension, doesn't it? The struggle between security, what feels safe, and destiny, that deeper calling within us.
Okay, let's talk about the author first. Paulo Coelho. We know him as the Brazilian novelist, but his own life story is maybe the best example of the book's philosophy.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. His credibility isn't just academic or theoretical. It's rooted in experience, deep experience.
Yeah.
Before the novels, he was a lyricist, a journalist. Mm. He was really involved in counterculture stuff. His early life was just full of intense searching upheaval.
Right, a really unconventional path. He explored different spiritual traditions, faced political activism, even imprisonment, apparently, traversed the hippie trails. These weren't like side trips. They seemed to be the very foundation for his writing later on.
That's exactly it. And the sources point to one pivotal experience that really seemed to crystallize everything for him. That 500-mile pilgrimage.
Camino de Santiago.
The Camino de Santiago de Compostela, yeah. That intense physical journey became this powerful metaphor that runs through all his work.
So he kind of emerges as this modern fabulist,
right?
Blending spiritual searching with this very simple, almost deceptive storytelling style.
Deceptive is a good word for it.
And his own choice, leaving stability behind to become a writer against, you know, probably a lot of expectations, mirrors the book's central idea. Fulfilling your personal legend often requires taking a big risk.
And that's why it connects, I think. It's not just abstract advice coming from nowhere. It feels like tested wisdom from someone who actually listened to that inner voice, despite the odds.
Yeah.
His life is sort of the first proof of concept for the book's theme.
Okay, so let's turn to the story itself. The main character is Santiago. He's a shepherd boy in Andalusia, Spain.
Mm-hmm. And he's pretty content, you know, with his flock, his routine, until he starts having this recurring dream.
The dream. That's the inciting incident, the call to adventure.
Right. A dream about treasure hidden way over the Egyptian pyramids.
And this dream immediately introduces the core concept of the book, the personal legend.
Explain that a bit more. What exactly is the personal legend?
It's presented as your unique destiny, the specific reason you were put on Earth, the thing you are meant to achieve. And the really radical idea here is that the universe isn't indifferent or hostile to this quest.
It actually helps.
It actively conspires to help you achieve it, provided you're truly committed to pursuing that path.
That idea of universal conspiracy, in a good way, that changes the whole dynamic, doesn't it? From you struggling alone against the world to being somehow supported.
Precisely. And beneath this simple adventure plot, you know, boy chases dream of treasure, there are these huge themes being explored. Destiny versus free will, for one.
The paralyzing power of fear, the nature of true love, and this idea of communing with the soul of the world.
The soul of the world, like a connecting force.
Yeah, a kind of spiritual energy that binds everything together. It's through this connection that Santiago starts to understand the world and receive guidance.
So the book's ambition is pretty big then. It's trying to, what, re-enchant our view of the world?
I think that's a great way to put it. To encourage us to stop seeing life as just a series of random disconnected events and start seeing it as a meaningful, interconnected quest.
Where things like signs and omens actually matter, they guide you.
Exactly. And Santiago's journey unfolds like a series of lessons, each one building on the last.
Let's get into that journey then. Part one, The call and the test starts in Andalusia. Santiago has the dream, feels restless.
Mm-hmm. He meets a gypsy woman first, who interprets the dream, but it's the next encounter that's really crucial.
Melchizedek.
Melchizedek, yeah. The mysterious king of Salem. He appears right when Santiago is wrestling with whether to actually do anything about the dream.
And he's the one who really defines the personal legend for Santiago.
Yes, he formalizes it, tells him it's his duty to pursue it, and crucially, he tells Santiago he has to sell his sheep, his entire livelihood, his security, to fund the journey.
Wow, that's a huge ask. Sell everything based on a dream and a conversation with a mysterious old king.
It is. And Melchizedek also gives him two stones, Urim and Thummim.
Right, I remember those. What are they for?
They're meant to help him read the omens, to get a yes or no answer from the universe when he's completely stuck or lacking clarity. Sort of tool for beginners in reading the world's language.
Okay, I have to jump in here. This king tells a shepherd boy to ditch his entire life savings, his flock, based on a dream and this idea of cosmic help. Isn't that, well, incredibly risky advice? Does the book grapple with the potential for this to just lead to ruin?
That's a really fair question. The way the book presents it, though, is that this complete commitment, this burning of the bridges, is actually necessary.
Necessary how?
If Santiago kept some sheep back, just in case, he'd always have that escape route. He wouldn't be fully invested. The universe, in Coelho's telling, demands that total leap of faith as the price of admission to pursuing your legend. You have to be all in.
A steep price. And almost immediately after he takes this leap, disaster strikes.
Almost instantly. He arrives in Tangier, North Africa, full of hope, and promptly gets robbed of everything he has.
So much for the universe conspiring to help.
Huh. Well, maybe the help is the test itself. It's that first major crucible. The point where, honestly, most people would probably give up and go home.
Blame Melchizedek. Curse the dream.
Exactly. But Santiago doesn't. He dusts himself off, and this setback forces him to find work, which leads him to the crystal merchant.
Oh, the crystal merchant. He feels like such a pivotal character, maybe even more impactful than some of the magical elements.
I agree. He's this incredibly poignant cautionary tale. He's a good man, decent, runs a respectable shop, but he's completely stuck.
Yeah.
Paralyzed.
By fear.
Yeah. His lifelong dream, his personal legend, you could say, was to make the pilgrimage to Mecca, but he never went.
Why not?
He rationalized it. He told himself, and Santiago, that the dream of Mecca is what kept him going. If he actually achieved it, what would he have left to live for? He chose the comfort of the routine, the known, over the potential disruption, and yes, fulfillment of the dream.
That is such a modern trap, isn't it? Keeping the dream pristine and perfect in your mind by never actually trying to make it real and risk it being imperfect.
It's so relatable. And Santiago works for him, brings new energy at the shop, helps to become more successful, earns enough money not just to go home, but to buy back twice as many sheep.
The safe option is right there. Go back, be comfortable again.
But seeing the merchant's quiet regret, that sort of living death of an unfulfilled dream, Santiago makes a different choice. He decides to press on towards Egypt.
He learns from the merchant's stagnation.
He sees that the pain of not pursuing your dream, that slow erosion of spirit, might actually be worse than any hardship you face chasing it.
Okay, so he leaves the crystal shop, uses his earnings to continue the journey. This takes him into the Sahara Desert, starting part two, Desert Wisdom.
Mm-hmm. He joins a caravan, and here he meets another significant character, the Englishman.
Right, the Englishman who's also searching for the alchemist. Their approaches are totally different, though.
Complete opposites. They're classic foils. The Englishman represents the purely intellectual path to wisdom. He's got his nose buried in books, complex theories, ancient texts, trying to learn alchemy from instructions.
While Santiago...
Santiago learns by observing, watching the desert, the animals, the people in the caravan. He's learning the language of the world through direct experience and intuition, showing that deep understanding often comes from living the questions, not just reading about them.
Book smarts versus world smarts, almost.
Something like that, yeah. And it's in the desert oasis, El Fayum, that Santiago encounters Fatima. Love.
And this presents another potential stopping point for his quest, right?
A big one. He falls deeply in love and is ready to give up the pyramids and the treasure to stay with her.
But Fatima doesn't let him.
No. And this is a really crucial lesson about love in the book. Fatima embodies the idea that true love is liberating, not possessive. It supports your personal legend. It doesn't demand you abandon it. She trusts that if they are meant to be together, the universe, the soul of the world, will bring them back together after he fulfills his destiny.
So love isn't a distraction from the path, but fuel for it.
Exactly. It should empower your journey, not hinder it. And while he's at the oasis, Santiago's growing ability to read the world, to see the omens, has a major consequence.
He has that vision.
Yeah, a vision of an impending attack on the oasis, which is supposed to be neutral territory. He warns the chieftains, they prepare, and the attack is repelled. He saves the oasis.
And this act gets him noticed.
It gets him noticed by the alchemist.
Finally, which kicks off part three, mastery and revelation.
Right. The alchemist recognizes Santiago's connection to the soul of the world and takes him on as a sort of apprentice for the final leg of the journey. The lessons become much more direct, more spiritual.
He teaches him about listening to his heart.
Listening to his heart, understanding its fears and desires, because the heart comes directly from the soul of the world, so its guidance is pure, even if it speaks in the language of emotion. And this is where we get that incredibly famous line.
The fear of suffering
is worse than the suffering itself.
Yeah.
Confronting that core psychological block.
And then comes the ultimate test. They get captured by a desert tribe.
Yes. And the alchemist, in a rather high-stakes move, tells the tribal chief that Santiago is a powerful magician who can turn himself into the wind, and that he'll demonstrate it in 3 days.
Just like that. Put Santiago completely on the spot.
Completely.
Oh.
Talk about pressure. Uh-huh. Santiago is understandably terrified. The alchemist basically says, figure it out, and leaves him to it.
So how does he do it? How does he turn into the wind?
It's this incredible sequence where Santiago has to communicate directly with the elements. He speaks to the desert, asking for its help. Then he speaks to the wind, then the sun. Each element has its own limitations.
So he has to go higher.
He has to go to the ultimate source. He speaks to the hand that wrote all, which the book equates with the soul of God, the force behind the soul of the world.
And by connecting with that ultimate creative force,
he aligns his own will with the universal will. He understands his connection to everything. And through that understanding, that unity, he becomes the wind, performing the miracle. It's the philosophical climax.
He's essentially achieved mastery. He's become an alchemist himself.
Exactly. Not turning lead into gold in the traditional sense, but transforming his own fear and limitations into connection and power. The alchemist then does perform a literal act of alchemy, turning lead to gold, partly to show Santiago it's possible, but also to provide resources before Santiago continues alone to the pyramids.
Okay, he finally reaches the pyramids, the place from his dream. Treasure time.
Not quite so easy. He starts digging where his heart tells him to, and then he's attacked again.
Seriously. Robbed again.
Robbed again. Beaten up by refugees from the tribal wars. And this feels like the final crushing blow. He's made it all this way, achieved enlightenment, basically, and still this.
Does the book address that sheer irony, the seeming pointlessness after everything?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The physical pain is bad, but the psychological defeat feels worse. But then comes the final revelation, and it comes from the mouth of one of the robbers.
How?
The leader of the robbers mocks Santiago for being foolish enough to cross a desert because of a dream. And then he says something like, you know, I had a recurring dream myself right here on this spot about a treasure buried back in Spain.
No.
Under a sycamore tree growing in the ruins of an old church where shepherds and their sheep often sleep.
The exact place where Santiago started his journey. Where he had his first dream.
The exact place. The physical treasure was waiting for him back home the entire time.
Wow. So the entire journey, the desert, the alchemist turning into the wind, was all just to find out he should have stayed home.
Not quite. The treasure was physically there, yes. But Santiago wouldn't have been able to recognize it or claim it without the journey. He needed the wisdom, the resilience, the understanding of omens, the connection to the soul of the world. He needed to become the person capable of receiving the treasure. The journey transformed the seeker.
That reframes everything. It makes the journey the point, not the destination.
Precisely. The transformation is the treasure in many ways.
Okay, that's powerful. Yeah. Let's try and distill these big ideas into the core themes, the kind of takeaways the book offers.
Right. First and foremost, there's the personal legend, your unique calling. And the book stresses this isn't just some selfish whim. It's almost a spiritual duty. Aligning with it brings universal support.
Which ties into the second theme, interconnectedness, that soul of the world idea.
Exactly. The notion that everything you, me, the wind, the stars, events, is fundamentally connected. And because everything is connected, the universe can communicate with us.
Through omens.
Through omens, yes. And the book suggests omens aren't necessarily spooky or supernatural. It's more about learning to pay attention, to your intuition, to coincidences, synchronicities, those little nudges from the world. If you feel like you're not getting signs, maybe you're just not listening closely enough, both externally and internally.
Right, tuning into that subtle language. And the final big theme seems to be the transformative power of the journey itself.
Absolutely. The real reward isn't the gold. It's the wisdom, the character, the self-knowledge gained along the way. Fulfillment comes from the process of becoming, not just arriving at the end point.
Coelho has a real knack for crystallizing these huge ideas into simple, memorable lines, doesn't he?
He really does. They're the kind of quotes that stick with you.
Let's talk about a few key ones. Maybe start with the absolute core thesis. And when you want something, all the universe conspires in helping you to achieve it.
Yeah, that's the big one. It's about faith, alignment, and intention. It suggests that if your desire is truly authentic, if it resonates with your personal legend, it sets things in motion. It's almost an instruction. Get crystal clear on what you truly want.
Okay. How about this one, which challenges our motivation? It's the possibility of having a dream come true that makes life interesting.
I like that one. It shifts the focus. It says the value isn't just in getting the dream, but in the pursuit itself. The hope, the excitement, the engagement that comes from chasing something meaningful. That's what keeps life vibrant, saving us from just, you know, comfortable monotony.
Right. And then there's the one aimed squarely at procrastination and fear. Tell your heart that the fear of suffering is worse than the suffering itself.
That hits hard, doesn't it? It directly confronts what stops most of us. The anxiety about failing, the worry about hardship, that anticipatory fear is often far more damaging and paralyzing than the actual experience, if it even happens. The message is clear. Feel the fear and do it anyway because regret weighs heavier.
So true. And finally, a nod to persistence. The secret of life, though, is to fall 7 times and to get up 8.
Classic resilience. Failure isn't just possible, it's basically guaranteed on any meaningful journey. It's part of the learning process. True success isn't about avoiding falls, it's about getting back up, learning the lesson, and continuing on. Persistence is key.
Okay, so for you, the listener, how do we take these powerful metaphors and actually apply them? How do we avoid being the crystal merchant in our own lives?
Well, first, I think it starts with identifying purpose. You have to ask yourself that challenging question, setting aside the practicalities for a moment. If fear and money were completely off the table, what would I dedicate my life and energy to?
Trying to isolate that core desire, the personal legend, from societal expectations or ingrained fears.
Exactly. Then you have to embrace risk. Think about Santiago selling his sheep. In our lives, this doesn't necessarily mean quitting your job tomorrow, but it does mean taking calculated risks that push you out of your comfort zone.
Could be starting a project, learning a new skill, having a difficult conversation, anything where the outcome isn't guaranteed, but aligns with that deeper purpose.
Right. And that leads directly to overcoming the crystal merchant syndrome. If you recognize that feeling in yourself, that comfort-based paralysis, where you prefer the safety of the unfulfilled dream to the potential messiness of action, you have to break the pattern.
Oh.
Small steps, concrete actions. Enroll in that course you've been thinking about. Send that one email. Dedicate just 1 hour a week to that passion project you've deferred for years. Just start moving.
Build momentum. And finally, what about relationships? The Fatima lesson.
Yeah, ensuring you cultivate healthy relationships. The people closest to you should ideally be supportive of your growth, of your personal legend. Relationships shouldn't create dependencies that stifle your journey. They should be partnerships that empower it.
It really is a compelling framework. It's simple on the surface, but it pushes you to think about your life as an act of creation, not just something that happens to you.
It's a profound call to courage, delivered in the form of a fable. Very effective.
What stood out most to you or maybe surprised you revisiting it for this? For me, it really was that ending. The fact he had to go through all of that, the desert, the near-death experiences, the spiritual transformation, just to realize the physical treasure was back home under a tree.
Mm-hmm.
It really hammers home that the book isn't truly about finding external gold. It's about the journey awakening the potential, the magic that was already inside him, dormant.
I completely agree. And for me, the most valuable takeaway is precisely that. The journey itself develops the capacity to see what was always there. It's not about finding something totally new out there. It's about developing the inner eyes, the wisdom, the courage to recognize and claim the value and power that resides within you, perhaps right where you started. The shift is internal.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.